Hello, I'm Amber Athey, The Spectator's Washington editor, and I'm here to encourage you to subscribe to The Spectator's American Edition. If you visit spectator.us/subscribe, you can get our print and digital edition for just $7.99 a month. This means you get unlimited access to our amazing website, and we'll send you a beautiful 80-page monthly magazine. You'll also have access to our mobile app. Subscribe now at spectator.us/subscribe. You won't regret it.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics and now the Joe Biden presidency. We will be looking at how a 78-year-old president will change America, and we'll be asking if normalcy, which is what he promised to bring, has returned to American politics. The answer, of course, is no. I'm delighted to be joined today by the great Thomas Frank, who is a historian, a writer for The Guardian, among other places, and the author of many great books, most recently The People Know, A Brief History of Anti-Populism. And we're going to be asking, what does it mean, or what will happen, if the Wuhan lab leak hypothesis turns out to be true? Now, Tom, I'm talking to you about this because you've just written a very, very good piece for The Guardian. And it's really about science and the idea of science and expertise.
Yes.
And how, at the start of the pandemic, sort of official think, for want of a better way of putting it, was that now is the time where people have to realize that they have to trust science.
Yeah.
And they have to believe in science. And in recent weeks, we've had sort of a growing number of people saying that the theory that the virus, COVID-19, came from a lab is more credible than previously thought. And this has suggested that actually the scientists who dismissed this theory quite vigorously a year ago were wrong. What are the implications of that politically, globally, and so on?
Well, so I'm not going to go into the geopolitical implications between the West and China, because that's what everybody else is talking about. You know me, Freddie. Whatever anybody else is talking about, I'm not talking about that. I'm strictly about, you know, cultural history is my thing.
Yeah.
It's all I think about.
You're the yang to the media yin.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, that's good. Anyhow, so it goes back further than just the beginning of the pandemic. There's a sort of a crisis of confidence in institutions in this country and in the UK as well, where Americans, by and large, stopped believing in their leadership class. This is one of the explanations for the rise of Donald Trump. There was a full-blown panic about it here in this country in 2015, 2016. All of these essays and books were written about it. By and large, the term that the media used for this phenomenon was populism. We've talked about this before. It's a complete misnomer.
Yeah.
What they mean by it is the insolence of ordinary people, that ordinary people are rejecting society's elites, and how dare they? And there's a huge literature on this. This was, every columnist in the Washington Post and the New York Times was, you know, up in arms about this. The problem of populism, our failure to respect the respectable, to look up to our betters, all that stuff. And here comes COVID, 3 years into the Trump administration. And Trump, by the way, seems to be just a disaster for these institutions. He doesn't respect the CIA, doesn't listen to anyone. Anyhow, this is a very well-trod path, this whole argument about expertise and how the American people need to be taught to respect expertise. And like I say, it's a long-running hobby horse of the American sort of, I hate to use this term, but ruling class.
Yeah.
Okay, the people who write our, because it means something different in England, I know. But in America, I'm thinking of the people who run our institutions, who have advanced degrees, who run the newspapers, who run the TV networks, who run Silicon Valley, who run Wall Street. And these people are enormous believers in technocracy, expertise, and what they call science, by which they do not mean the scientific method. What they mean is the truth as handed down by people like they themselves. And they, you get yard, all through the Trump era, you saw these yard signs. I remember, I've told you about this before, Freddie. I live in Bethesda, Maryland. It's an affluent suburb of Washington, D.C. Everybody has advanced degrees here, or they seem to anyways. And you see these yard signs all over the place that list all of these left-wing causes on them. And one of them is science is real.
Yeah.
Which is just another way of saying social authority is real.
Yeah.
You know, because science, of course, is not real. Science is a process for getting at the truth. It's not a group of people who hand down, you know, the law.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so all of this was under huge question during the Trump years. Then here comes COVID, and COVID seemed to restore science and truth and expertise and authority to its rightful position. And all of a sudden you had, you know, medical authority figures who were elevated to the supreme position of, you know, determining what we could and couldn't do in response to the pandemic. And we instituted all of these rules. I'm not talking just about the face mask, but about social distancing, about closing up all these businesses. And basically they, you know, we suspended the Constitution. We suspended the sort of typical pattern of American life in order to listen to these guys. And so all of a sudden, the sort of liberal dream came true and science was back on top. Expertise was back on top. And now here's the thing. The aspect of the Wuhan lab leak that nobody is considering is if this turns out to be true, scientists are not the heroes of this round. They might well turn out to be the villains. That's what's freaky about this.
I mean, when it all started, because I'm a crazy person, I was listening to Steve Bannon's podcast. And Steve Bannon's podcast is preposterously named Steve Bannon's War Room. But every episode, yeah, they were talking about gain-of-function research. They were talking about how the spikes in the proteins and the virus didn't look normal. And they had experts who everybody then dismissed as joke experts coming on, and they talked to them about it. And it's obviously
Bannon was talking about, I did not know that. Steve Bannon was talking about gain-of-function research?
Absolutely. I mean, back in February.
By the way, that is something real, as I have learned in the last couple of weeks. Do you know I live about two blocks from the National Institutes of Health? NIH. It's right down the street from me. It's right here in Bethesda, Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I'm here to tell you gain-of-function research, well, that doesn't establish any expertise at all, that I live in the proximity of the building.
I mean, I suppose the interesting line on gain-of-function research is that the Americans stopped doing it, right? Because it was too dangerous, so they possibly outsourced it.
It's highly controversial. This is what most people don't know, but it's in the literature. A gain-of-function research is when you take a virus from animals or from humans or whatever, from the past, and you make it more virulent. You fiddle with it in all sorts of ways, and you make it more deadly, and you make it more transmissible. This has been going on for quite a while. It's not the same thing as like the biowarfare stuff that they were doing in the 1950s and 1960s. This is different, but it is very dangerous. And the reason it's dangerous is because if there's ever a lab leak, I mean, these are guys sitting around with I don't know, name your disease, you know, anthrax or a deadly version of the flu from World War I or something like that, and figuring out ways to make it more transmissible. Now, this sounds so nutty that every time I describe it to someone, I have to say, this is considered legitimate. The sort of virology community thinks that this is legitimate research. That's their consensus, that this is okay to be doing this. And the reason it's okay to be doing this is because you're trying to stay ahead of the next disease. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
Unfortunately, there's a real big built-in hazard to this, which is if somebody drops a vial of this stuff, or if they infect a mouse and the mouse gets out of its cage. And, you know, there's a million ways. Lab leaks happen all the time. So, Freddie, I went to the University of Chicago way back when. You know, I was reading in a list of lab leaks. Some guy at the University of Chicago, my alma mater, was fiddling with bubonic plague, and it got out and it killed him. Yeah, this is no joke. Lab leaks happen and people die from them all the time. In fact, they happen so frequently, you can predict it, you know, mathematically when they're, you know, that they're going to happen. So you've got really deadly research, and you've got the certainty that there will be lab leaks. And we don't know for sure what happened at Wuhan, but there is circumstantial evidence, well, documentary evidence that they were probably doing gain of function research. And it happened. The lab leak happened.
I mean, I think so. I was talking about Steve Bannon, then people like him were dismissed as crazies early on, and Tucker Carlson did a little bit on it quite early on, I think later April, May. And that was always dismissed as crazy talk, crazy right wing populist talk. But the strange thing was, because the government
don't make me mad, Freddie.
The government,
stay away from the P word.
I'm going to use the P. I'm dropping it in. Just, the American government was seen as crazy and populist. So therefore, Pompeo, who took this very seriously, he's quite a hawkish Secretary of State, took this.
Yeah. You know, he's from Wichita, Kansas.
Oh yes.
Yeah, he really pisses me off. But that's a difference. That's a story for a different occasion.
But I think we have to give him some credit here, because he did take this very seriously, and he ordered an investigation, a State Department investigation, into what was going on in the lab, whether there are any links between the Chinese bioweapons military program, things like that. And in January, just before this year, before he left office, he published a statement. The State Department published the best of their intelligence findings on this, which said all the stuff that has just come out again now. But everybody ignored it because they thought that's just Trumpy populism. That's not real science.
Yeah. So can I tell you what do I mean? And I myself was one of those people that dismissed it. And why did I do that? Because I would open up the Washington Post and they reassured me countless times all this stuff was nonsense. And, Freddie, I'm an extremely cynical person. I just wrote a book trashing, political science and mainstream media and all that stuff. But even so, I'm 55 years old. I'm set in my ways. And I believe what the newspapers tell me. And when the newspapers tell me that they even did these fact check things, you know what I'm talking about?
Where
they're
exactly
like, we know the facts and this guy has got the facts wrong. They even did that and said it was they called it Pants on Fire.
Yeah.
It's not the Washington Post. It's a different organization.
You wrote the best piece trashing the Washington Post I've ever read for Harper's about the Bernie Sanders campaign, but yet you would still treat it as a source of authority on some things.
Look, I'm this new era that we're living in is going to take some getting used to. You know me, I'm extremely critical of the press. I am. But at the same time, I mean, how else am I supposed to know what's happening in the world around me? There is no other
way. Listen to Steve Bannon's
war. I'm not going to go to China myself and just start asking people, there is no other way. And I like to think that I'm a canny reader and I can read between the lines. Do you remember I.F. Stone? He was a left-wing kind of provocateur from 50 years ago. He loved to trash the Washington Post. And he once said that the great thing about the Washington Post is you've got all of these wonderful page one stories. The thing is that they're never, oh God, I'm blowing the joke. He had this hilarious way of putting it, but he said, you never know which page they're going to be on. You'll find a page one story buried in the, deep in the guts of the paper, And I always like to think that I'm a critical reader and I can see through that. Well, I am a little ashamed to admit that I didn't see through it in this case. It also, look, the fact that Trump and Pompeo and Bannon were so keen on this really made me suspicious of it. One of the ways that I do media criticism, the way that everybody does media criticism is you say, take, for example, the Bernie Sanders story. These people are all saying the same thing. Why are they doing that? Do they have an ulterior motive? And that's the case with, for example, one of the biggest media failures of our time. By the way, if this lab leak thing turns out to be true, that easily takes the cake for the biggest media failure of our time. But the reigning champion, which is Russiagate, and which is obvious. I mean, the motive for that is so obvious. It's to get Hillary Clinton and the Democrats off the hook for losing the easiest election of all time, 2016, when they're running against the most unpopular presidential candidate ever nominated by a major American party. And they succeed in losing to this guy. How the hell do you do that? And so they make up this whole theory about the Russians came and the Russians did these terrible things and they cheated and et cetera, et cetera. And it's so easy to see the motive there. And with Trump talking about the lab leak and Pompeo, it's also easy to spot their motive, which is that they want to get tough with China. They want to wreck China's image. And so it was easy for me to dismiss that. And there's one other thing. They often claimed that this was deliberately leaked and that it was some kind of biowarfare thing. And look, that's just like no one would do that, Freddie. That is ridiculous. Now, what I'm talking about, people doing a variety of research that is considered legitimate, gain-of-function research, and having a lab leak, those are things that happen all the time. This is a very, very eminently plausible scenario. There is a difference. I have not become a Trump supporter. Although, I should say, Steve Bannon is intriguing to me in a way that not like that I find him appealing, but that he is interesting to me in a way that other right wingers are not.
Yeah,
he says things that are counterintuitive that you don't hear from a lot of other right wingers. But we're not going to go there now. That's a subject for a different occasion.
Let's not. He's got Democrat blood, which I suspect you.
Yes, but he never follows through. But do you remember his denunciation of Wall Street?
Yes,
for the 08 financial crisis. That was fascinating. You never hear a Republican saying stuff like that, or in this country. You never used to. I mean, I guess now everything is changing. But
well, let's not go down that road. But let's talk a little bit. I'm interested in when conspiracy theories are socially acceptable among, for want of a better word, the ruling class, and when they are considered trash opinions that belong to the sort of Untermensch. Because, as you say, Russiagate was completely bogus. I mean,
yeah. Well, about 90%.
90% bogus. Sorry, sorry.
The Russians did buy ads on Facebook. Yeah. You know. They proved that. And some of them are really hilarious. If you're a critic of advertising, you got to go and look at these. They will make you chuckle. Anyhow, but keep going.
But so Russiagate's completely bogus. There are QAnon conspiracy theories that are obviously also insane.
Yeah. Oh, those are hilarious.
Those are hilarious. But, you know, the lab leak theory gets shoved in the crazy pile and then has recently transferred. And it seems to be because there was this letter from a group of scientists. And that suddenly sort of moves it into...
Can I tell you what opened my eyes was this essay in Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with this publication, it is not a conservative publication. This is a very radical publication, and also one with a certain amount of scientific credibility. You know, they've for a long time tried to keep an eye on the nuclear arms race. This is when I was... When I was younger, this is what they were known for, and they've lately branched out into sort of biowarfare and lab leak stuff, you know, the dangers of certain kinds of experiments. And they ran how many words is that story? 6,000, 7,000 word essay by a former New York, by the way, and this is interesting too, a former New York Times science reporter called Nicholas Wade. Everybody who's listening now should read it. It is up on their website. But the fact that this wasn't in the New York Times, and in fact, this guy Nicholas Wade first published it on Medium, you know, one of these free websites, you know, that you could just put stuff up on, and then it got picked up by Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. That is crazy. He did the sort of obvious research that a science reporter would do, and that I would have done if I knew anything about science reporting. I don't. That's not my beat, you know. It's not what I do. But he went in and did what's called a Freedom of Information Act request for various documents from the NIH about Wuhan. And he got the documents, you know, which you can do in this country. I don't know if the UK has a similar arrangement, but you can request otherwise secret documents from the government.
Yes.
And they basically have to turn them over to you. Now, it takes them a long time. They drag their feet. It's a long and difficult process. But he finally got the documents. And they seem to show not only that the Wuhan lab was doing gain-of-function research with bat coronaviruses, but that, and this is the part that blew my mind, it was funded by us.
Yeah.
The United States. Yeah. In part. Now, that's obviously extremely controversial, but that would explain why someone like Pompeo knew about it, because he was funding it, you know?
It might have been Fauci.
We don't really know. And look, there is no way to get to the bottom of this short of a massive investigation. Now, here's the part of my article where I thought it really gets interesting is when you start seeing these resonances between this screw up and the financial crisis, the last big international disaster. And there are all sorts of ways in which, obviously, these are completely different fields, high finance and virology, but they both are in the field of white-collar expertise. And so you see, do you remember my whole theory about these guys? This is my last book, Listen Liberal. I don't know if you even read that one.
I did. I've read all of them, I think.
I'm just giving you a hard time. So that was the book that was about this kind of reverence for expertise and reverence for the highly educated. And one of the things that I pointed out in there was that there are certain pathologies of the professional elite that come up again and again and again. And if you don't account for those and you just instead insist that everybody has to worship these guys, I mean, you're going to make all kinds of blunders. You have to hold these people accountable. One of the problems is that our system for holding them accountable have completely broken down. So the professions are supposed to be activated by higher motives, right? They're supposed to be interested in the public. Well, obviously that's not the case with Wall Street. So you have these other professions that are supposed to watch them, hold them accountable. For example, accounting. You know, you think of the Enron case where accounting was such a big part of it, or with the mortgage bubble, the professionals and the accountability sort of factor failed again and again and again. Professionals like to make decisions by consensus. They like to, everybody agrees on the same thing. John Maynard Keynes had a famous line about bankers. I'm gonna blow this one too, where he said the problem with bankers is not that you'll get a bad banker here and there that's determined to rip everyone off. It's that the entire banking community does the same thing, and that thing is stupid. They've all agreed to do the same thing, and it's the wrong thing. And that's how professions work. They do things by consensus. There's this kind of groupthink that is built into the model. And unless you have ways of constantly checking or shattering that groupthink, this kind of thing is going to happen. You're going to get the Washington Post and the New York Times and everybody else agreeing on this whole range of things, about like 5% of which, or maybe 50% of which, are wrong. And you're never going to know what's going on in the world. This is the problem with the professions and with the professional class and with expertise, or what we call in America, science.
Yes.
This is why you need troublemakers. This is why you need original thinkers. And dare I say it, this is why you need populism.
Yes.
And anyhow, so it's the same goddamn thing happening again. The accountability mechanisms have broken down. The professionals are all in agreement, of course, 100% airtight consensus. Of course, they aren't, as we're now discovering. There are a lot of scientists out there that disagree with this. It's just they were either actively silenced. This is one of the details that blows my mind. Facebook was censoring these guys. Can you believe that? You know, it's like every little element of the liberal consensus here got on board this ship, and then the ship sank.
Yes. Well, that's exactly what happened. But I think, as you say, it's a double whammy. It's even a triple whammy if you go back to the Iraq War. And so you have these three major events.
Yeah. There, by the way, another great example. And there the Secretary of State really succeeded in shaming himself.
Yes.
Continue your thought.
At the end...
And the media, of course, going along with it, right? Do you remember that? They all believed that we were going to find that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and the public in America was basically conned into believing that Saddam Hussein masterminded 9/11.
Very similarly to the way you had scientists or doctors presented very frequently parroting the same lines on television, you had generals dressed up for the cameras.
The pathologies that I just described are especially well known with the military professionals, you know, the groupthink, etc., because obviously it's a hierarchy of command. It's not just a bunch of guys arguing about something, you know.
But you say in your piece that you you hope that you're wrong, and that...
This is so scary, Freddie.
Yes, it is scary. But also, it could be good for populism, which I think you think is a... I know the word populism, let's not get into that, but...
Well, my kind of populism is dead in this country, and I don't know how it's ever going to come back. What I mean by that is a sort of social democratic populism, what you in Europe would call that. The real deal, you know, this kind of working-class radicalism.
Yes, but also a sense that the ruling class are very often wrong, and we shouldn't take them seriously just because they're the ruling class.
Yes, there you go. Now, that's the takeaway. Exactly. But it is, this stuff is scary once you start thinking about it. If this really happened, like I am describing, this is a doomsday scenario, and we're lucky we got off lightly. And by lightly, I mean 3 million people dead, the economy of the world completely disrupted, untold bankruptcy, evictions. I mean, you know the costs.
Yeah.
The costs of this dwarf anything since World War II. And if what I'm describing is true, this could happen again. And that's why we have to start writing about this. We have to start thinking about this, because if that is true, God damn it, we have to have accountability, and we can't be shoved aside by people saying, oh, the scientific community. No, there has to be outside eyes on this. There has to be critical voices on this. This cannot happen again. I grew up during the Cold War, Freddie. When I was a kid, I used to watch movies like Dr. Strangelove or Failsafe, and they terrified me. Terrifying that we could have accidental nuclear war. And we never did. You know, the safeguards held. But I don't know if you read this stuff. We came real close to it a number of times when there would be some false alarm would go out over that. And thank God, you know, it never happened. Well, this just happened. This is terrifying if it turns out to be true.
I don't know if you've read Michael Lewis's book, The Fifth Risk. He's got a new one out.
I haven't. Not up to speed on that yet.
Well, that's this idea that there's always this unseen risk in government, and there's this huge federal government structure that has various provisions in place to stop things happening, terrible, terrible things happening. And if there aren't enough people paying attention, terrible things do happen.
Right. No, that's a different pathology. That's a sort of Republican pathology, which I wrote about years ago. It was called The Wrecking Crew, this book I wrote about that. I'm talking about the Reagan administration and the Bush administration here.
Yes.
Trump did a lot of the same thing. But when you take these federal departments and just trash them, you know, and fire all the talented people, and which they both did, this is all well known. This
yes.
is easy to establish. There's certain terrible things happen. But those are terrible things that the administration wants to happen.
Yes.
This is something else, you know.
I suppose what I'm getting at is on the right, there is this Wrecking Crew tendency to sort of to trash authority and certainly liberal authority.
But we know why they did that, though, Freddie. They did that so that a different authority could have its way.
Yes.
So they trashed oversight of Wall Street, for example. I mean, the most famous, most consequential example. They trashed all the different regulatory agencies, actively deregulated Wall Street. And this is, by the way, Clinton did a lot of this too. A Democrat did a lot of this too. They did all that stuff in order so that Wall Street could enjoy a fantastic boom. And it happened.
Yes.
You know, Wall Street did get to enjoy that wonderful boom. And then Wall Street wound up, you know, trashing the economy of the world. These things have consequences. What I'm talking about here is there's going to be some of that mixed in, but the biggest one is the professional class groupthink, lack of accountability, et cetera, that I'm talking about. I mean, well, look, we don't really know. We haven't got to the bottom of it. We may never get to, and that's what we should probably end on. We probably never will get to the bottom of this.
Yes.
China has shown no interest in letting outside observers go digging through the files. The various whistleblowers who have emerged from inside China were very quickly silenced.
Do you think the problem is more profound and more spiritual in that nobody cares about what's true, right? Particularly in journalism, it's about narratives, it's about tribal bickering, and nobody really, for a very long time, is interested in getting to the bottom of any story. And as you say, we may not get at the bottom of this story, but we may be living in a time, one of the popes called it the tyranny of relativism, where nobody is interested in pursuing the actual truth, because the truth doesn't matter. It's whatever you want to believe.
Ouch. Well, I mean, look, I don't have an answer for that. Like you, I have experienced the last few years with growing astonishment. You know, I watch a guy like Trump who just will say anything. I watch the media react in their own way. You know, Fox News, I remember when that got going, and that was sort of the first, or one of the first, that was a major innovation in what you're describing, where they were like, you know, politics is actually really good entertainment. We can adopt this kind of party line, like, you know, the Communist Party of old, and stick with it through thick and thin. And people like that. people see that as fun entertainment. And I've seen the Fox News effect happen to people that I know. They tend to be older white men. And it kind of takes over their brain. But then MSNBC and various others are like, hey, we can do this same thing, you know, on liberals. And I've seen that happen as well. And it's funny because, Freddie, all my life I've been dogged by this. You know, people think my politics are too extreme. I'm this radical left winger. you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I'll be damned. I'm like, I've become a centrist somehow. I don't know how. My views haven't shifted at all, but I'm like watching what's going on with my, you know, former, you know, liberals, people that were my friends, and they become these doctrinaire party line zealots about things that aren't true. And I just don't know what to say anymore. It's all around us. Well, I know what to say. If this thing turns out to be true, all that has to go away. We have to, when the financial crisis happened, we had to get tough with Wall Street, and we had to re-regulate those guys, and we had to have an inquiry. We had to get to the bottom of it. Well, that is the answer today. We have to get to the bottom of this. What's really interesting to me is there's a number of columnists and sort of members of the commentariat out there. By the way, I am not one. I am not part of the pundit corps in America, just so you know. We'll talk about that in a second, why I throw that out there. They're already saying this doesn't make any difference. Who cares whether it was a lab leak or not? Because the disease is upon us. The important thing is stopping it, et cetera. True. But you have to have accountability. The idea of dismissing accountability after the biggest catastrophe in 60 years and just saying, yeah, it doesn't really matter, that is mind-blowing to someone who once aspired to be a member of the professional class. You know, that we could just blow it off and say, no, we're not going to get to the bottom of it because I'm not sure we'd like what we find. It might ruin our appreciation of our heroes. It might make Donald Trump seem right again. You know, I'm sorry. That can have no place in this kind of inquiry. The funny thing is, Freddie, at the end of the day, I am dedicated to accountability and to the truth and to finding things out and to getting to the bottom of things. I mean, that's what my whole populism book was about. You've got this whole academic discipline now, this whole pedagogy that's based on a mistake. You know, I talk about this all the time. You and I have talked about this.
Yes.
And these people, they rule political science now. The whole thing's based on a mistake. What do you say about that? I mean, do you just say, well, let it go because it makes Trump look bad? You know, they call the right wing, they call them names. No, I mean, you've got, if you value the things that are true, if you value learning, no, you have to say these things and you have to demand accountability. God, I'm sorry. I get so frustrated talking about it. The reason I said that, by the way.
Yes, do say that.
I knew when The Guardian had put the story up on their website because I started getting emails from crazy people. You know, you know, this always happens when you run a story. They find out your personal email address and they start coming at you. And they all assumed that I was some kind of, what's the term that I like to use? That I'm a member of the pundit bureau.
Yeah.
You know, that's my term for these guys in America. Because again, it's the groupthink thing. They all think alike. They all have the same opinions. You know, the Washington Post, the New York Times, et cetera. You know, all these different prestigious online magazines. It doesn't matter. They all say the same goddamn thing. They're the pundit bureau, and everybody assumed that I'm part of that, and I'm confessing, you know, my the error of my ways. I'm not. I am in exile from the Pundit Bureau.
It's your fault for being honest, because you put in the piece, I didn't believe it, right? So I imagine people he's admitting.
It's true, though. It's true. I'm leveling with the readers. You know, if you can't be honest about this stuff, then don't be writing for the newspapers. I said that because it is true. And I did have a moment where I read this article and a light went on in my brain and I started reading other articles and I couldn't believe it. You know, and it shifted my point of view. And I wouldn't be honest if I didn't admit that.
Well, Tom, you are, at the risk of flattering you, you are one of the most honest and best writers in America. So keep being frank.
Shit, I knew you were going to say that.
Thank you very much for listening to that episode of Americano. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe. And if you really enjoyed it, please leave us a star rating, preferably 5 stars, and a review.